Right, to the reading. It's from Luke chapter 14. I'm reading from the New International Version, the original New International Version. It might be slightly different from the Bible that you're reading from if you're following, but it doesn't matter because I'm not going to be focusing on individual words. It's the general meaning behind the passage that I want to look at. So Luke chapter 14, I'm going to start reading at verse 7, but by way of background, Jesus was at the house of a prominent Pharisee to eat. And he's already, as we heard last week, he's already healed someone on the Sabbath and caused a bit of friction. And I like Jesus because he's not afraid of speaking his mind. That's perhaps an obvious statement to make. He seems to not enjoy, but he makes people uncomfortable. And I certainly get that from the passage I'm about to read. So starting at verse 7, this is, talking about Jesus. When he noticed how the guests picked the places of honour at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honour, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this man your seat. Then, humiliated, you'll have to take the least important place. But when you're invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he'll say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you will be honoured in the presence of all your fellow guests. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. If I can just interject there, you can imagine some of the guests now squirming. Imagine what then happens. Then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or relatives, or your rich neighbours. If you do, they may invite you back and say you'll be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you'll be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. When one of those at the table with him heard this, he said to Jesus, blessed is the man who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. Jesus replied, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I've just bought a field, and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Another said, I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another said, I've just got married, so I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town, bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and make them come in, so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those men who are invited will get a taste of my banquet. And I pray that the Lord will add his blessing to his word. We have a warning. And that warning is the first part of the reading. I'm not going to dwell on this, but verses 7 to 14 is a reminder, and they're there throughout the New Testament, that the last should be first, the first should be last, that we shouldn't get above ourselves, we shouldn't be pompous, we shouldn't have expectations of grandeur or special treatment. It's the humble that Jesus came for, to a large extent. I worked for 40 years in the criminal law, as many of you know, and when I first, in fact, before I even started working in the law, I had an image of lawyers. Now, this image of lawyers was that they were all overweight, pompous, full of themselves, and high above lowly people like me. I had that prejudice for years, and I have to confess, after 40 years, I can tell you that some of them were like that. I became a lawyer, and I also put on weight, but I always tried to remember my place, that I was no better than anyone else. Whether I was defending a criminal or prosecuting them, I often reminded themselves that frequently the difference between the person I was, say, prosecuting and me was just that I'd met Jesus. I had, as a youngster, been involved on the fringes of crime, and it was God's grace that stopped me going down a very dark path. I was very fortunate. But that's what that first part of what I read is. It's a warning to us. Don't get above yourself. Remember, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. And as I say, you can imagine some of the guests squirming when Jesus said that. And then you see the host squirming when Jesus goes on to talk about inviting not just the rich and so forth, but inviting the poor. But we have an invitation. Verse 17, at the time of the banquet, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. If I can explain what happened at this time in history, is that if you were holding a banquet, a great feast, you wouldn't issue an invitation saying, come round to my house at 7 o'clock. Because you would have no idea how many people were going to come. You wouldn't know exactly when it would be ready to eat. And I've got the impression that this banquet or feast was probably over many days, not just a meal, a sit-down meal like you or I would think of. And so the practice was in those days that you'd invite people. They would say, yes, I'll come. You then knew literally how many oxen you needed to slaughter, how many pigs, they wouldn't have slaughtered pigs, would they? How many sheep or goats you had to slaughter, how many to cater for. And then when it was cooked or just about to be cooked, you would then send your servant out to say, okay, it's ready, come along. By the time they arrived, everything was ready. I can remember my mother, we moved into a new house in Elm Grove in Newport, and instead of an oven, well, in fact, as well as an oven, there in the main living room, in the dining room, in fact, was an Rayburn. It's like an Arga, fired by coke, and my mum took one look at that and said, that's going. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we had a shed full of coke, so we thought, right, we'll use the coke up, burn it, and then we'll get rid of the Rayburn. Well, we fell in love with it. It became the heart of the house. But it had one or two quirks. If the wind was in a certain direction, you had a cold oven. If the wind was in another direction, you had a hot oven. And so often my mum would look at it and say, right, today we're having meringues, or today we're having bread, or whatever. And of course, in those days, you didn't have accurate timing of cooking. It was ready when it was ready. And besides which, people didn't have clocks. Certainly in the winter, they wouldn't have known that 7 o'clock was the time. How would they have known? It was all done by word of mouth. But this idea of sharing food goes back through human history a long, long time. It's fundamental. By inviting someone to share a meal, whether it be a banquet or just a piece of bread, you are asking them to trust you. Why do I say that? Well, poisoning your enemies was a very common way of getting rid of them. And so they'd only accept the invitation if they trusted you. Also, whilst eating, particularly as, of course, they lounged on low couches or even laid on the floor, you were very vulnerable if someone came up and stabbed you in the back. But also, it's a sign of tremendous fellowship. If you're sharing your food with someone, you've got no idea, perhaps, how long your food is going to last. Famine used to be common. I find it quite surprising that it's in the time of my great-great-grandparents that the Irish famine happened, the great potato famine, when the Irish spread to America, to England and other places. Indeed, my own ancestors came from Ireland at that time. And so sharing your food with someone was quite a thing because you didn't know how long your food would necessarily last. Indeed, we use words which reflect this, which perhaps we don't understand the source of. I'm fascinated by how words originated. Think of the word companion, or company, or companionship. Compan literally means with bread. So a companion was someone that you shared bread with. That trust, that togetherness, that friendship. And so that is behind the idea of this banquet, I think. You may wonder where this idea of this banquet comes from. You know, you've got this person, and he seems to be quoting a saying, a phrase, a maxim. I think he's trying to alleviate the tension which everyone's feeling. And he says, "Blessed is the man who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God." Where did that come from? Psalm 23, "The Lord will prepare a table in the face of my enemies." It's in Isaiah chapter 25. It's in other places in the Old Testament. And it's right at the end in Revelation. And in Revelation we read that the banquet which we're going to have in heaven is the wedding banquet when the bride and groom finally come together. When Jesus, the groom, comes to take his bride, the church, you and me. There's going to be a great feast in heaven. So that's the idea where this great feast comes from. An invitation. And of course, Jews had a long-standing invitation. They were the chosen people. But now that Jesus was there and inviting them to the feast in effect, they're beginning to find excuses. So we've had the preparation of the feast, the food is ready, the rich man is ready for everyone to come. And so he sends his servant out, "Okay, tell them to come." Come. Very first word of our first hymn. Come. And what happens? The excuses begin. Now, I'm extremely well qualified about excuses. I've given loads of them in my time. When I was a schoolboy, I had every excuse under the sun for not doing my homework. Except for one, the dog never ate my homework. We never had a dog. And claiming the goldfish ate it might not have been believed. But I was very good at coming up with lies, I'll be honest with you, as to why I hadn't done the homework. The simple truth was, I hated doing homework. However, became a solicitor, I do not know. But excuses. Then professionally, as a court clerk, I heard every excuse under the sun as to why offences were taking place. As a defence solicitor, I gave every excuse under the sun for my clients. And as a prosecutor, I tried to answer them. And when you look at the excuses given for not attending the banquet, you realise just how flimsy they were. Rather, some excuses are quite funny. I always remember the driver. Motoring summonses are very boring in the courts, and so as a court clerk, I used to look for humour in them. I was not disappointed. I well remember the person who was speeding. I think it was in Forest Road. I think they were doing probably 44 miles an hour or thereabouts. And the excuse was, I was rushing to get home because I was running out of fuel. Yet when you analyse that, you realise, although I can understand it, it's actually a feeble excuse. But let's look at the three excuses that were given to this great banquet. The recently bought field, verse 18. I have just bought a field, and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Have any of you, if you're lucky enough to be a house owner, ever bought a house without looking at it first? The answer probably is no, unless you're one of these very rich people who can gamble, buy them on auction. You go and look at it first. And I'm sure that this man buying a field would have known it or would have looked at it. You know, was he getting a field full of rocks for his money? Or was he getting a fertile place where he could, you know, put his oxen, plant his corn or whatever? He must surely have known that. And besides which, what's to stop him going along? Bear in mind he's already bought it, not I'm about to buy. He's already bought it. Why can't it wait until after the feast? It'll still be there. If it's a rocky field, it'll still be a rocky field. If it's a fertile one, it will still be fertile. So that excuse, that reason, I dismiss. Carries no weight with me. I'm being strict. Next one. If I've got this correct, he's bought 10 oxen. I think that's what is referred to by a yoke. Imagine the cost of this. I know we're probably talking about, for want of a phrase, the rich upper class here. But would you ever go and try out oxen after you've bought them? Again, he's bought them, it's a done deal. He can try out the oxen later. It's a feeble excuse. He's trying to get out of it. Then we have the final one, the recent marriage. My answer to that, as I say, I'm very strict. My answer to that is, well, ask if she can come too. It'll save her having to cook, or the servants having to cook, in all probability. One excuse after another. Excuses which don't actually hold water. We're very good at perhaps coming up with reasons why we don't do things. I know for years I came up with reasons why I resisted, for want of a phrase, the Lord's appeal to me to become a Christian. It doesn't make sense. It's ridiculous. I believe in science, not religion. It's not relevant to me. Or the great one, I'll think of it later. I'll put it off. I'm very good at prevaricating, putting off decisions. But the feast is ready. It is waiting. And so when you analyse all of these answers or the excuses, you realise they don't hold water. These are people trying to get out of it for whatever reason. I know the feeling. I had the privilege of being the president of the Isle of Wight Law Society for a year. In case you think that's a very high position to hold, it's more a case of it was my turn. But one of the advantages and disadvantages of holding that position is that other law societies invited me to their annual dinners. And I was warned by the previous dinner. By the previous president, watch out for this dinner. Accept the invitation, you'll have a wonderful time, but don't eat for 24 hours before it. Why? Well, she said, mine was 7 courses long. And I was not disappointed. It was a 7 course meal. Took a long time. I felt a bit bloated by the end of it. But these invitations came with quite a quite a burden, an apprehension. I'm not very good at crowds. I'm not very good at meeting strangers. I'm not very good at formal events. And to put it mildly, this was the formal event to top all formal events. My wife, Rachel, who was sometimes invited to come along to these, was even more apprehensive about them. She has that dilemma, what do I wear? What jewellery do I wear? Do I have my hair done? Etc., etc. And she would get quite anxious before these dinners. And so I can perhaps understand why some people might look to try and excuse themselves from attending the great banquet. But when it comes to the great banquet that we're invited to, that one in Revelation, we shouldn't come up with any excuses whatsoever. And I find it interesting what the rich man does when he starts getting these excuses, and it seems that no one's coming. You know, he's killed the oxen, he's killed the sheep and the goats, he's got all this food going to waste. So he decides, right, it's going to go to the deserving. It's going to go to the poor rather than those who think they're the deserving. He says, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind and the lame. The image I have there is, you know, go within the town, go to those unfortunate people, bring them along. That happens, and there's still room. And what does the rich man say? Go out into the countryside, go outside the town, and bring in those who are homeless. Go to the roads, the country lanes, I think I've read in one version, the hedges, and bring them, and compel them, make them come in, so that my house will be full. And that to me speaks to the glorious truth that Jesus didn't just come for the Jewish nation. He came for us Gentiles. We were the ones outside of the town. We were the ones outside of the Jewish faith. And we have got this invitation. Come, fill heaven. And that's great. Wonderful. And as I say, I'm so glad that I accepted that invitation, that I accepted Jesus into my life, that I believe on him thoroughly. And one great advantage of getting older is, I think it's wisdom, some call it old age, but I realise just how much Jesus has done for me, is doing for me, and is going to do for me. Now, Thursday, I'm on the bus to work. I bus to work simply because I've got a free bus pass and it saves me money. Yes, I'm mean. And as I'm going in the bus at about 20 miles an hour, I look across the road and I see something. And I think I know what that is. And I burst out laughing. I don't normally burst out laughing in public. I burst out laughing. I then went back after work, photographed it, and sent the image I'm about to show to you to my family, saying, where is this? And I said, I think it's the best one I've ever seen. Where is it? Now, if you don't, you may know this, but do you know where it is? Or can you work out where it is? By the prison. And it's by the prison because that is a mailbox or post box topper showing Freddie Mercury hoovering, wearing a pink jumper, cardigan, and a black miniskirt and tights. Now, I wouldn't have thought that anyone would ever show a scene like that at Bethany. But if I then show you what's written around the bottom, it makes it clear. I want to break free. That great Queen hit. And I find it quite surprising that I realised what it was, as I say, in a bus at 20 miles an hour, the other side of the road. I thought it was hilarious. My wife persuaded me to send it into the county press. They put it on their Facebook. And that was late Thursday. By dinner time on Friday, they'd had 200 comments, everyone laughing their socks off or finding it brilliant, very, very funny. I don't know how many viewings it's had now. I'm not claiming to have gone viral, but that appeals to my sense of humour. I want to break free. Now, part of me said, well, hang on a minute, is it appropriate that I send this to the county press? Because people in prison, they can't break free. Do they think I'm getting at them? But that thought very soon was dismissed by me because throughout my career, I've known that many of the people I've helped, many of the people that are prosecuted, dare I say, have wanted to break free. They wanted to break free from their lives, from their addictions, from their lifestyle, but they just can't. And so that's why I've incorporated those pictures here. Because I believe that becoming a Christian is us breaking free. As I've said, we have got this invitation. Jesus is calling all of us, or has called all of us. What should our response be to it? It should be acceptance, yes. We may make mistakes. He doesn't promise us an easy path. Things get difficult. But isn't it wonderful that he accepts us as we are, as I started off by saying. There is that old hymn, "Just as I am, without one plea, but that your blood was shed for me." Jesus died on the cross at Calvary so that we might have eternal life. So that all the wrong we've done in the past, and we've all done wrong in the past, that's forgotten about, that's forgiven. The price for that has been paid. We are so fortunate. As I say, sometimes we make excuses, sometimes we get it wrong, sometimes we put off making a decision about becoming a Christian. Perhaps we've only sort of committed a bit of our lives to God. Now, he doesn't want all of us to be missionaries. He doesn't want all of us to be preachers. He doesn't want all of us to do the things that are expected. He can use each of us where we are, with the people that we move with our relatives and our friends. And we can have companionship with each other. Because one day, I hope we'll all be together in heaven, that I'll see you there. It's going to be a great privilege to be there with Phil, with you. Even greater is going to be the privilege of being there with Jesus when he comes for us. And so the parable of the great banquet, the excuses. Before I became a Christian, I had every excuse under the sun not to do it, to put it off. If you're still thinking about it, don't put it off any longer. Accept the invitation. Come and join that great feast in heaven, that wonderful feast when we meet our Saviour face to face.